Welcome to the Post Purchase Pro Podcast.
This is the only podcast that dives deep into post-purchase marketing to help Amazon sellers increase sales, ranking, reviews, and profits. It's everything that happens after the initial sale that makes a difference. We call this the back end.
Welcome to the Post Purchase Pro Podcast.
And we get a repeat. So, Seth, I think I'm going to start lobbying for a new intro, okay? Because it seems like we talk more than just about post-purchase marketing. I know that was our idea a couple of years ago when we started the show, but it seems more often we just talk about business and marketing in general. And we have an amazing guest today, the ultimate alpha cheapskate himself. I'm going to introduce you guys. But you're going to love this kid. So let's just set the stage. Seth and I are in June. We're in Austin for the SellerCon by Amazing.com. And somehow I found myself into this after party sort of deal. Like, I normally don't do after parties unless we're sponsoring it. But for whatever reason, I walk down there and start hanging out in this tiny room with ultra loud music and people trying to scream at each other over the music. And this kid was standing over in the corner. For whatever reason, I kind of migrated that way, started talking to this guy, and he's blowing my mind. The guy's like still wet behind the ears, like literally doesn't even shave yet. He started his first business when he was in diapers. You know, and then like by the time he got to be old enough to drive, his first car was a U-Haul box truck. All right. So that he could haul more merchandise. Now the kid's out to do $100 million and he's running quite a remarkable business in this niche market in Amazon. Do you remember?
I do. It's a completely different business model that I'm dying to get into. So let's go ahead and welcome Mr. Isaiah Fritz to the show. Isaiah,
welcome to the Post Purchase Podcast. How's it going? Did you finish that banana you were eating backstage?
Yeah, I just ate my banana, you know, here in Indiana, Southern Indiana. Yes. It's lunchtime.
Yep. I sound more Southern Indiana than you do. And frankly, folks, we don't grow bananas in Southern Indiana. We have to import those from Costa Rica.
That's right.
Central America, right? So.
That's right.
Isaiah, I'm super impressed with you, super impressed with your drive. And we're going to go kind of off script, if you will, on this interview. Sure. Normally, we have these questions that we want to talk about.
Yes,
but
sir.
I really want to dive in. If you'll give me like a 2-minute background on who is Isaiah from House Fritz and why. I mean, tell us about your family background. It's just a remarkable story. You have like 742 siblings and you guys are in Southern Indiana. Where are you from? Tell me about your family and what the heck made you who you are.
Number one, my parents made me who I was for sure. So
I hope so.
I grew up here in a cornfield in Southern Indiana, and I got 6 brothers, and I'm the oldest, and I have 1 little sister at the end, and my mom is about to have the 9th child here in a couple weeks. So I will be 24 years apart from that. So I'm 23, going on 24 here pretty soon. And my birthday is coming up in October towards the end. So I'm super excited about that. But I remember that my mom, she has told me, right, that she's been selling on eBay since 1998. Back before there was PayPal, they had money orders. And there was no images. It was just text, right?
Wow.
That's what she said. I can't really imagine a world like that. And they had something called dial-up where like – and
yeah. I'm familiar with that world. What are you trying to say?
Yeah, yeah. So she sold all kinds of stuff on eBay back then just from yard sales and some, you know, just liquidation pallets, Goodwill, that sort of thing. And I remember – when I was 6 years old, we were at a Goodwill and she was buying stuff to sell on eBay. And she says, you know, I wish that we could just bring the computer to Goodwill so we could search the products on eBay before we buy them. Right. And then 2 years later, 2008, she got an iPhone and we were able to actually bring the computer to Goodwill and search the products before
That's
you
amazing.
Buy them. So
what was it then, Isaiah? I mean, what was it that gave you that spark where you decided you're going to go out on your own? I mean, we'll talk about your 100,000 square foot warehouse and all this business that you're doing now. But what was that spark? What was that epiphany moment where you said, wait a second, I'm not going to be satisfied with a 9-to-5 job. I'm not going to go work for someone else. I don't want to be told what to do. I want to create this for my own. I want to control my destiny. I want to provide for my family and all 17 of my siblings. What was that spark? What was that moment that set it off for you and fanned that flame that you had deep down to be an entrepreneur?
Well, I was just selling stuff on eBay with my mom as a side gig, really. But my goal was to have a 9-to-5 job, working at a Christian nonprofit like my dad did, and just help others. So that, you know, that really, you know, my life was really changed, just by seeing my family. I come from a family of servants and have given their lives for others. So I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do too. So that's what I wanted to do. And then, so I started just selling online thing, just as like a side income, because really there's not a lot of money in working in a nonprofit. So I said, hey, you know, this will just be a side thing. And then my goal, when I was like 16, 17, I started, I was selling on Amazon on the side. I started working in nonprofit full time for a good $8 an hour. And I was loving it. And I made enough money on the side to pay back my salary. So I said, you know what? I'm going to, you know, just keep doing this. And it was an awesome goal. And then I got laid off. And so I said, well, I'm just going to go full time. And if I can't work directly in a nonprofit, then I'm going to support it. So that's what I did. And I ended up building a company with that vision. And what I didn't realize with the vision of like, hey, we're going to build a company to help others, and that there was other people that really liked that vision also. So as I was growing and wanting to scale and build more, just having that North Star, it's been really help with culture and everything that we base off of our decisions, what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And so it's really been awesome. And like I said, if I wouldn't have had the influence of my parents, then I wouldn't have had that vision in the first place.
Isaiah, what does your business look like now? A lot of times, you know, hearing the grassroots tale is nice, but it's also nice to know like who we're talking to. So what does your business look like now? What's your business model? Because that's the interesting part to me, is your business model is totally different than anybody else that I know. So can you describe your operations now?
Absolutely. So I started just buying and selling stuff at yard sales. So then I started buying and selling stuff like retail arbitrage, then wholesale. And then my Amazon account got shut down because I didn't have invoices from the manufacturers to distributors. And I was getting these IP complaints and all these things. And during that time where my Amazon account was shut down, it was really hard for me. And I was like, I'm never going to sell on Amazon again. But I ended up getting a hold of Jeff Bezos's technical advisor through LinkedIn. And he was like, hey, I'm really sorry for what we did. And I got a personal call from Seattle, and they gave me my $40,000. They said they would hold forever, and I got it back. And I learned a lesson. If I'm ever going to sell on Amazon, I'm only going to deal with manufacturers, distributors. So I Googled manufacturers near me, started knocking on doors, and got a random candle company to trust me to sell their products on Amazon. They were selling on Shopify, doing about $1 million a year. Grew that company to $2 million a year in 2 years. And after that was like, wow, I could do this with more.
So companies. Wait a second, Isaiah, back up. So you walk into the candle factory, right? Yeah. You're fresh out of the trenches, had your Amazon account shut down.
Yeah.
You lucked on to one of Bezos' staff members who personally called you, gave you your money back, and got you started. Yeah. Now you have to go in, identify clients or partners, if you will, and you found like a candle company. So a couple of questions. I've been doing sales my entire life. I mean, I've cut my teeth on doing door-to-door cold calling.
Yeah.
Number one, how many calls did you have to make? I mean, like how many doors did you have to open before you got the yes? And what was your exact pitch, the way you remember it, to this candle company?
So I probably hit at least 10 manufacturers locally before I got the candle company.
Okay. And do you remember what kind of products they were manufacturing?
Oh yeah. You know, like, dashboards for a airplane and, large plastic doors and, you know, things. They were looking at me like, what are you talking about Amazon, you know, like
you're honing your pitch. That's what you're doing.
And I was just like, hey, I'm here to see if I can sell your products on Amazon. You know, that was my pitch. And so I went to the candle company and they were closed. It was 6 o'clock at night. But I noticed that the back, you guys are going to love this. The back, dock door was open. So I jumped the dock, which I've done this very couple times in my life. I jumped the dock and I'm like, hey, anybody here? And nobody said anything. So I walked around this candle factory and I'm like, this is weird. We have a candle factory in our area. Well, this kind of, it looks kind of trashy. I thought candle companies would be a little more sophisticated, but it really wasn't that sophisticated. So then I ended up walking around, yelling around. And finally the CEO walks out and is like, what are you doing in here? And I'm like, well, I'm here to sell your candles on Amazon. And he's like, yeah, you're too late. He's like, I just got a guy 2 weeks ago to sell the candles on Amazon. And I'm like, yeah, but well, tell me a little bit more about your business. So he just starts talking about his business because one thing I learned, people love to talk about their business, right? And so then he talk about all his business and stuff. And I said, so then I'm learning about his business. And I'm learning this Amazon partner that he just partnered with was selling XYZ candles. So I said, well, how about I sell maybe some of the other products? And this guy was an inventor. He was a, you know, awesome guy, still friends with him. And he's like, but he's very scatterbrained, got all these ideas. And he's like,
even I just, though you said his operation looked like a dump, he's still your friend, huh?
Oh, he's an awesome guy. Yeah.
Okay.
And, but he's like, hey, maybe you could sell my life-size human pool table. And I was like,
oh, what table?
A pool table. Like,
pool table. Okay. Pool table.
Yeah. I don't know how they say it in Northern Indiana, but anyway,
I wouldn't know either.
Yeah. But anyway, so I said, okay, I don't know. That's a little big to sell on Amazon. I said, how about I just sell this other line of candles? And he's like, oh, okay, we could try that too. So I said, all right. So then, in the first month I sold 1,000 candles. And the other guy sold 18. So he's like, you know what? I'm going to go with you. So we.
Why, Isaiah? What did you do differently?
I listened, number one, to the brand to understand what is their best sellers. Why do they sell? What makes them special? Whatever. And I translated the brand success that they were having off Amazon and put it on Amazon. So one thing, variations. They were really big into variations. So I made a ton of variations on Amazon. And then I just, when I would get an order, we would just make to order the product, which the other guy, he was just buying the product, the variations he thought would do well, and then try to sell them, where I was like, I'm just going to list everything as much as I can, as many different scents and flavors and sizes that I can. And then we'll see what sells. Right. And then after we got some traction on stuff, then we started doing FBA and selling those products. And I just kept a margin. I didn't have any money at the time. So I was just like, hey,
you had 40 grand.
Well, I was also in debt. So that event that just, went straight to my credit debt. So anyway,
so you're selling candles. The next thing you know, on your family's property in this compound,
you
decide you're going to build your first house, which is a barn dominium, right? So that you can warehouse, so you can live with your product. Is that accurate?
Yep.
So tell us how soon from the time you launched the candle and started seeing traction, how soon before you got your next client and then decided to build this warehouse and live in it?
Well, I had decided to the warehouse probably before the whole candle thing. Because, you know, you got to remember, you know, I was, before my account got shut down, I was selling a lot of stuff, liquidation stuff. So I was already in the process. I was like, hey, I'm going to build a pole barn. And then I was like, you know what, how much money would it be to add an apartment in there and actually live in it? And so
was this before you were married, or were you married and your wife was okay with this?
No, it was way long before. I was 17 when I decided.
Hey, honey, come over for dinner tonight in my pole barn and I'll take you home in my U-Haul truck. I mean, it sounds like romance to me.
I have an awesome wife, guys.
Bet she has to be awesome to put up with you.
That is right. And so, you know what? Get this. She's more of a cheapskate than I am.
I doubt that.
I love that.
I promise. That was one of the characteristics that I highlighted
Okay. You're not really a cheapskate because you quickly moved from the pole barn and your family's property to this giant warehouse. Do you have a picture of it somewhere on your desk there? Or do you probably have a digital picture, right?
Hey, well, I mean, you just Google online selling partner. There's like just a picture on Google.
Okay. So you moved into this giant warehouse. So when you first moved into this giant warehouse, what, how many square feet is it?
So I'm just so everybody knows, I'm leasing. I'm not rich. I don't own it, but it's
yet.
Exactly. So I'm leasing 60,000 square foot.
Okay. Now, how much square foot in that 60,000 could you fill up when you decided to sign that lease?
Well, I don't know, maybe like 30,000 of it. And the other 30,000, I partnered with another guy and we started doing all of his shipping for his stuff. So it's kind of like a 3PL type of thing.
So Isaiah, you get the candle company as your first client. Sean's jumping ahead in the story a little bit, but you're selling the candles for a fee, right? You're taking a percentage of the sales. So that's
selling on my account. That's the thing. I wasn't selling on his account. I sold on my account. And the reason he said he had his account and he had his account shut down because he had three late shipments. So I couldn't, he couldn't open another account. So he was banned from Amazon, right? So I was selling on my own account. Oh, yep. There's the warehouse. And I would buy the candle at X amount. And then when I would sell it, I would get that margin, right? And it was pretty good.
So then you stumble into this business model because the candle company had their account shut down. So you're selling it on your account. That you're then transferring, you collect the money and then transfer it back to them, but you keep a portion of it for your fee. And then I guess your business has expanded from there simply by amplifying that exact same structure, right? I mean, that's how you do business today.
Yeah. So normally I work on 30, 60 day terms or consignment, depends on the situation with the brand. We'll buy the product and sell it. And we do everything. We do everything for the brand. We're complete service. We, you know, all the listings, the content, the blah, 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 ads, whatever, and the logistics. And so we're get very specialized on being able to do Amazon at scale as a complete service for brands. And so we work with non-Amazon focused brands because the ones that are Amazon focused already know what to do. So I want to work with people that don't know what to do. And so that I can grow them on Amazon.
Sounds good. So Isaiah, for those, just imagine, go back to when you were sourcing products at yard sales with your mother.
Yeah.
You're a young entrepreneur. You're just budding the business, right? If someone is watching this or listening to this show on the podcast, and take a young entrepreneur like my son Cash, for example, he already kind of knows what to do. Yeah.
He's going to be way more successful than I am. Cash is going to be way more successful.
That's what Seth keeps saying.
He's pretty driven.
Well, yeah. Let's say I'm a 13-year-old guy. You know, I'm homeschooling. I want to go out there and create some friction in the world. You know, create a little value and get paid for it. Where would you suggest I start? You know, if I'm just still wet behind the ears trying to get out there and do something, what advice would you give yourself 10 years ago when you were 23 and you only had 7 brothers and sisters? Or when you were 13, sorry.
Oh, yeah. Well, number one thing, and I think, you know, back when I was 13, and I'm really glad, is you gotta make your life right and start focusing on where am I going to be in 10 years? Where am I going to be in 20 years? And start thinking that way. So many kids that I know of, they don't think that far out. They just think to the next day, maybe if you're lucky. But so I think that's one thing, is start thinking about how you want to set yourself up for your life and think long term, you know, and I think then you can start making decisions. Okay, if I want to hit this goal in 10 years, what do I need to do now to start doing that? And the thing you need to do is you need to go out and get experience, and you need to go just start doing things. Don't, everybody's always like trying to figure out, oh, I want to go watch, you know, this course over here. And if I follow this course, then I'm going to make a bunch of money or whatever. It's like, how about you just go figure out where something it is selling for more over here and it's selling for less over here. Just try to find that and get in the middle of it. And it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, yeast or
yeast.
Yeah. Piece of metal. What is this? A Sasquatch.
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 That's the best name.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeast. It's funny that you said yeast. Like yeast is sort of representative in the Bible, in the Holy Bible, that is, as sin. Why would you pick yeast out of all these items to sell? Because it's so small and insignificant?
No, because I made, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in yeast in like 3 days.
Whoa. Now this is a story we're gonna have to dive into. You did what? You made hundreds of thousands of dollars in selling yeast
in 3 days.
In 3 days. All right. So tell the story here.
So here on the Post Purchase Pro podcast, I'm going to teach you how to sell hundreds of thousands of dollars at profit at yeast in 3 days. So step number one, watch out for a pandemic. Okay. Again, when you see a pandemic, you will know people will want to make bread at home. And so that's kind of what happened is we were actually doing some retail arbitrage right at the beginning of the pandemic. And one of my guys was like, hey, this product is sales rank number one. Is this a bug? And I'm like, yeah, probably. And so we took a look at it and I'm like, huh, this yeast is $2.50 at the store and it's selling for $25 on Amazon. What? It's like, that's a little interesting. So I was like, well, we'll just buy it and see what happens. So we bought it and we like sold the whole case, like boom. And I was like, wow, that really is number one bestseller in grocery right now. So
how long did it take you to back that U-Haul truck up to Kroger?
Oh man, I was going all the way North Indiana to South Indiana, going all over the country with my U-Haul, grabbing all this yeast. But what even smarter than that is I called the yeast company and I said, I need a list of all the distributors. All your distributors. So then I called all the distributors and I got a pallet from this distributor. I got a pallet from that distributor. I got two pallets from this guy. And I was just collecting pallets of yeast. And I made 200 and some thousand dollar profit in 3 days of sales.
And since then your business has been on the rise, pun intended, right?
Exactly. So wow. That really helped me get the money I needed to start hiring talent, because before that I didn't have a chunk. So then that was like, okay, now I can start hiring talent and get people that are a lot smarter than me, a lot older than me. And so I
hired a smart man. If you'd have kept that $250,000, it'd cost you about $100,000 in taxes, but instead you redeployed the funds hiring talent.
You know, I haven't paid taxes in a long time.
Don't say that out loud. Somebody might take it the wrong way. So
I just redeploy everything, right? Yeah,
I get it. So Isaiah, remarkable story, especially about the yeast. But it's not just about the yeast or the pandemic. It's about having a nose for opportunity and being able to not only be blessed with seeing the opportunity, but also have just a little bit of craziness about you to go after the opportunity.
Oh,
to you kind of back your way into. What'd you say?
Okay, so here's what I really should not mention on this podcast. But
okay.
I may have had a U-Haul truck full of toilet paper.
You're lucky you didn't get mugged.
Yeah. You should have seen some of the store managers yelling at me. But anyway.
All right. So top three list for young entrepreneur coming up. You know, it doesn't have to be young because I'm an old man and I'm learning from you. All right. I'm like counting down the days to the next pandemic. Come on, COVID. All right. But listen, what are the top three things that I could do or do differently as I'm building my business that's going to make an impact on where I'm going to be in the next 10 years, the next 20 years? When you start thinking about decades, what are those, like, either something I need to be thinking about or something I need to avoid at all costs as an entrepreneur?
Well, don't ever like get set in your ways.
So be flexible.
Yeah, be very flexible in the beginning, right? So what I've had to unlearn that lesson more recently if you want to scale to 100 million. So you start off, you're super flexible, you're saying yes to everything, And then you have to unlearn that lesson and say no to stuff, right? And you have to say, like, no, wait a second. I have
like, now. Like joining masterminds, right?
So anyway, as you grow, you're going to get more and more opportunities presented to you, and you're going to see more opportunities. At first, you're only going to see like a little bit of opportunity because you don't have experience understanding and seeing opportunities. But then when you get bigger, you're like, wow, that's a $10,000 opportunity. And then that's a $20,000 and $100,000 and then $1 million opportunities. And you got to understand, okay, what are you going to focus on for the long term that's really going to make the most value? And I think what a lot of entrepreneurs forget is they always want to continue to go to the next shiny object, and they don't learn the lesson that says, okay, how about if I just focus on doing what I'm doing, I have way more expertise and experience in this one thing than most of the population. And if I continue to do it for another 5 years, I'm going to be unstoppable. Right. And build a moat that no one else can even come close to. So for me, I have to constantly remind myself at the point that I'm at, if I want to scale to 100 million, I just need to double down and focus on the one thing that I know how to do. And that is how to grow brands on Amazon. And how do I just continue to do that better and better and better and better and better and grow them online? And,
Isaiah, you also have another advantage in your business, which is what we call a mafia offer. You step in and you're not, I mean, when you had the conversation with the candle company, you had a big advantage because you said, I am going to essentially perform before I get paid.
Yeah.
And you are putting your own self at risk just because you know that you can perform. So you know how to spot opportunity.
Yep. But
you also know how to make an amazing offer. And then the most important piece, which you just hammered on, was actually perform. So a few different things working for you there.
Plus, think about this, Seth. If he's selling a product, he has exclusive right to sell that product on Amazon. He doesn't have to worry about competing for a buy box or having someone come in and steal his juice. So, and I love what you said there, Isaiah. You're working at the next level, you know, and you know if you want to make $100 million in sales, you're not looking for $10,000 opportunities. You're looking for $100 million opportunities. You're not going to solve a $1 million problem with a $10,000 solution. And I like that you're thinking that way. And I think Seth, this goes a long way for teaching people how to get out of their comfort zone and start getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I think Isaiah is, you know, he's a perfect testament to this because he's not only talking about it, he's actually doing it. Just look at his warehouse. So how close are you to 100 million now, Isaac? Or damn it, why do I keep saying Isaac? Scratch that. How close are you to 100 million now, Mr. Fritz? I can't screw that up.
I'm still probably 3 years out. But
you're still 3 years out. Okay. Yeah, but you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. You know where you're going.
Yeah. And if I can do it, you know, if our team, see, that's a big thing too. It's not about me anymore. Right. It's I can only do a little thing. It's my team that does everything now. Right.
And but so, it's still your vision. Don't discount that.
Yeah. But it's really my team though. And so if my team can do what we say we could do for these brands. Yeah. It'll 3 years.
So how many brands are you working with right now?
Around roughly 15.
Around 15. Mm-hmm. And do you need what? How many brands do you need? Here, you think to hit the 100 million?
Easy math. If I work it with a brand that they're doing $1 million a year currently on Amazon, that's one thing. They have to be already on Amazon somehow if it's resellers or whatever. Then if we can grow that 1 million to 2 million, right? Or if they're doing 2 million and we grow it to 3 million. But let's say on average, my average customer, I'm just throwing numbers out there, is doing $2 million a year on Amazon. Multiply that by 50 customers, that's 100 million. So all I need is 50 customers for 100 million. But we've seen that my average customer is actually getting more than 2 million as we're getting bigger. So I don't even know if I will need 50 customers. So that's
you're going to get there pretty quick. All right. So before we run out of time, which we kind of already have, I'm a brand out there. I have a little bit of exposure on Amazon, or maybe not, but I'd like to, and I want to work with online selling partner. What's the best way to engage you and reach out and learn more about what you can do for me as a brand?
Yeah, so we're an invitation-only company. So you can
kind of like my mastermind.
You can. I learned from the best. No. So anyway, we
be one, ask one.
Yeah, so onlinesellingpartner.com. You can fill out an invitation form, and then we'll do an evaluation and see if we're only going to work brands that we can work with brands that we can get behind and really know that we can help. You know, and that's the goal. I mean, we've worked with brands before that, you know, we were able to grow their sales by 20% or something like that, and or solve one little problem. And you know, it's like if we really want to work with a brand that we know that we can really make a difference and really solve big problems for the brand. And that's not always sales. Sometimes it's map control. Sometimes it's just creating a better customer experience or review generations or whatever it is. There's so many, every brand has their own story. But most people want sales, obviously, but it all leads back to that. So
sales seem to solve a lot of problems. That's for sure.
Control and grow. That's what we do. Number one, control your brand, because a lot of people don't have control of what's going on at Amazon. And then two, let's grow it.
I would have loved to have met him, Seth, when we were selling those infrared heaters and all my dealers were scrambling, going crazy, pulling their hair out, trying to tell on each other who's not following the map pricing and all that kind of thing. Yep. Amazon, you know, we're talking about 2009, 2010. Things were crazy back then. So, wow, what a great interview. I wish I could pick your brain for another 20 minutes. You're just a remarkable young man. A little bit of a cheapskate, but that'll get you a lot of places. And I know that you give credit to the living God. You and I are both on the same team there. And I just want to thank you for taking the time out today, Isaiah. Any last words of advice or parting words of advice for anyone listening or watching today or listening to this later?
If you want to be rich, live like you're poor.
I love it. If you want to be rich, live like you're poor. I love it. Seth?
Isaiah, thank you so much for coming on another episode of the Post Purchase Podcast. We'd love to have you back on in the future. We'll see everybody soon.